Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. On the program today, Kelly Jean Kelly and Mario Ritter report about America's best beaches, according to Dr. Beach, a coastal scientist in Florida. As always, we close our show with an American story. This week, we hear the first part of The Law of Life. Writer Jack London published the story in 1901. But right now, we go to Dan Friedel. He tells us about the progress of women movie makers in Hollywood.
The movie Wonder Woman, directed by Patty Jenkins, has earned over $600 million worldwide since its opening day on June 2nd. That broke the record for a movie with a female director. Jenkins' film now tops a list that includes other successful movies like 50 Shades of Grey, Frozen, Shrek, What Women Want, Sleepless in Seattle, and A League of Their Own. Wonder Woman sold over $100 million in tickets on its opening weekend. That was more than both Transformers, Age of Extinction, and Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Jenkins says her first priority was to make the best Wonder Woman movie she could.
So the fact that I'm a woman or she's a woman or we're all women or whatever was a wonderful, deep part of it. But it also, you just tune it out completely because I'm just a filmmaker trying to make a film that I care about that much anyway.
Jenkins' Wonder Woman is a superhero. She is strong, fearless, and has special powers. Her name is Diana. She leaves her perfect world on an Amazon island to fight evil during World War I. But Wonder Woman does not only solve problems with force, like some male superheroes do. Jenkins says her Wonder Woman, played by Israeli actress Gal Gadot, is more complex than that.
It ends up being so much more on an everyday scale about understanding and love and forgiveness and the complexity of life.
Gadot says she and Jenkins had the same idea of what they wanted from Wonder Woman.
I am so lucky that Patty was the one to direct me. Her vision for Diana was in line with mine.
Jenkins and Gadot are not the only female directors and actors making headlines in Hollywood. At the recent Cannes Film Festival, director Sofia Coppola won the Best Director Award for her film, The Beguiled. It comes out later this month in the U.S. Coppola's movie is a remake, which means someone else made a version of the same movie in the past. But Coppola tells the story from the perspective of the women in the story, instead of the men. Coppola's version focuses on the characters played by Nicole Kidman and Kirsten Dunst. They play teachers at a girls' boarding school during the U.S. Civil War. Their lives are changed when one of the girls finds a wounded soldier from the Union Army and brings him into the school to heal. Kidman says just because Jenkins and Coppola have been successful, that does not mean women are getting enough work in Hollywood.
Still only 4% of women directed. I think the major motion pictures of 2016.
And there continues to be the question of whether female actors and directors are earning enough money compared to their male counterparts. That came up in 2015 when it was revealed that Jennifer Lawrence earned much less money than her male co-stars in the film American Hustle. Recently, a story that Gadot only earned $300,000 for playing Wonder Woman went viral on social media. People could not believe the actress from the biggest movie of the summer earned millions of dollars less than Henry Cavill did for playing Superman. Cavill is said to have earned $14 million. It was a big headline, but it was not completely accurate. The Hollywood-focused publication Variety explained that $300,000 was Gadot's base pay. She will likely earn millions of dollars more from bonuses due to Wonder Woman's success this year and in the future. Even with Jenkins and Coppola's recent success, it is not clear that women will get to direct more major movies. Nicole Kidman is doing her part, however. While she was at Cannes in May, she made a promise to do at least one film every 18 months with a female director.
We as women have to support female directors. That's just a given now. I mean, hopefully that will change over time, but everyone keeps saying, oh, it's so different now, it's so different. It isn't. Listen to that.
I'm Dan Friedel.
Last month, we talked about the best beaches in the world, according to the website TripAdvisor. One beach in the United States made the top 10. Siesta Beach on Siesta Key in Florida came in at number 5 on TripAdvisor's list. But there are other extraordinary beaches across America. Today, we will tell about the top 10 as rated by a scientist and professor known as Dr. Beach.
Dr. Beach's real name is Stephen Leatherman. He directs the Laboratory for Coastal Research at Florida International University in Miami. He began his yearly best U.S. beaches list in 1991. He releases it every Memorial Day. Dr. Beach considers 50 conditions in preparing his list. They include water and sand quality, as well as safety and management.
This year, TripAdvisor and Dr. Beach agree on the appeal of Siesta Key, Florida. Dr. Beach rated the Barrier Islands Siesta Beach as the best in America. He noted its bright white sand that spreads more than 150 meters to the water's edge. He also described the clean, clear waters of Siesta Key as ideal for swimming.
We have to travel across the country and over the Pacific Ocean to reach the next beach on the list. Kapalua Bay Beach is on the Hawaiian island of Maui. This beautiful curved beach is protected by lava rock formations at both ends that extend far into the water. And that water is a deep, clear, inviting blue. Dr. Beach says, Kapalua Bay is filled with colorful tropical fish to see, and snorkeling equipment can be rented right on the beach.
Number 3 on Dr. Beach's list is Ocracoke Lifeguarded Beach in North Carolina, part of the state's Outer Banks area. These barrier islands of the U.S. East Coast are long and narrow, with good waves for surfing. Ocracoke is Dr. Beach's favorite getaway beach for its natural quality. He notes that it is not the place to go for a resort experience. No golf course or fancy hotels at Ocracoke. Dr. Beach says it is one of America's wildest beaches.
We are back in Florida for beach number 4. But Grayton State Beach Park is in the northwestern part of the state, known as the Panhandle. Like Ocracoke, Grayton State Beach is largely undeveloped, so it is especially popular with campers. Big dunes still protect the beach with its, in Dr. Beach's words, sugar white sands and emerald green water. People also enjoy playing in its tidal pools and walking or biking the more than 6 kilometers of park paths.
The next beach on the list may not possess the warm waters found at the last, but it is similarly quiet and peaceful. Cooper's Beach is in Southampton, New York. It is a family-centered beach lined with mansions behind the dunes. Cooper's Beach, like much of the Hamptons, is a pricey place to visit for lodging, restaurants, and other tourist needs. But the wide beach, lively seagulls, and Atlantic Ocean waves are free for all.
We continue north in our best beaches journey, and the water gets colder. Coast Guard Beach in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, is number 6 on the list. This pretty place is designated a U.S. National Seashore, and so belongs to the National Park System. Coast Guard Beach is often described as breathtaking. There are many spots to take in beautiful views of the ocean, dunes, and marshes. Winter visitors can enjoy seal sightings, and the area is home to many kinds of birds in the warmer months. And, of course, it offers great swimming in the summer.
It is back to Florida for Dr. Beach's 7th pick for 2017's Top 10. This one is not so easy to reach, but well worth the effort. Caladese Island State Park is on the Gulf of Mexico. Most visitors take boats to get to Caladese, but it can be reached by foot if you are up for a few hours of beach walking. Once you are there, you might just lie on the soft, warm sand or float in the green-blue water. But Dr. Beach says his favorite activity is boating through Caladese's mangroves.
Next up is another state park beach back on the Pacific island of Hawaii, also called the Big Island. Hapuna Beach is a perfect little curve of white coral sand and deep blue ocean. Dr. Beach says it is great for swimming, although the surf can be wild with strong currents. Luckily, there are well-trained lifeguards to help keep visitors safe.
Number 9 is a regular on Dr. Beach's yearly lists. Coronado Beach is in the city of San Diego, California, a state famous for its Pacific Ocean coast. Coronado is an extremely wide, flat beach that leads to a sparkling ocean, calm and warm in summer. The huge and elegant Hotel del Coronado is a beloved beach landmark. The Victorian-style building was completed in 1888. In 1977, it was named a National Historic Landmark.
Dr. Beach's final favorite beach of 2017 is found in South Carolina's Kiowa Island. Despite its name, Beach Walker Park offers more than a stroll on the sands. The lowlands area is also great for kayaking and watching the thousands of birds that make their home there. Dr. Beach also praises the area's fresh seafood prepared in the traditional lowlands styles, so you might want to come hungry. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And I'm Mario Ritter.
The Law of Life by Jack London. Part 1.
Old Kashkush listened greedily. Although his sight had failed, his hearing remained good. The slightest sound was recognized by a mind yet active behind the aged forehead. Ah, that was Sitkumha, shouting curses at the dogs as she beat them into the harnesses. Sitkumha was his daughter's daughter, but she was too busy to waste a thought upon her old grandfather, sitting alone there in the snow. Camp must be broken. The long trail waited while the short day refused to delay. Life called her, and the duties of life, not death. And he was very close to death now. The thought frightened the old man for a moment. He stretched forth a shaking hand, which wandered over the small pile of dried wood beside him. Reassured that it was there, his hand returned to the shelter of his old, worn furs. He again began to listen. He heard the noise of the half-frozen animal skins being moved. He knew that even then the chief's moose-skin tent was being packed. The chief was his son, leader of the tribesmen, and a mighty hunter. As the women worked, his voice rose, exclaiming at their slowness. Old Kashkush strained his ears. It was the last time he would hear that voice. There went Greenhouse Tent and Tuskens. 7, 8, 9. Only the medicine man's could yet be standing. There, they were at work upon it now. He could hear the medicine man struggling loudly as he piled it on the sled. A child cried, and a woman calmed it with gentle singing. Little Kuti, the old man thought. That child was always weeping, and it was sickly. It would die soon, perhaps, and they would burn a hole through the frozen ground and pile rocks above to keep the wolves away. And what difference would it make? A few years at best, and as many an empty stomach as a full one. and in the end, death waited, ever hungry and hungriest of them all. What was that? Oh, the men binding the sleds together and drawing tight the ropes. He listened, he who would listen no more. The whips whistled among the dogs. Hear them howl. Oh, they hated the work and the trail through the snow. It started. Sled after sled moved slowly away into the silent forest. And they were gone. They had passed out of his life, and he faced the last bitter hour alone. No. The step of a moccasin broke the snow's surface. A man stood beside him. Upon his head a hand rested gently. His son was good to do this thing. He remembered other old men whose sons had not waited after the tribe had gone. But his son had. The old man's thoughts wandered away into the past, until the young man's voice returned him to the present. "It is well with you," he asked. The old man answered, "It is well." "There is wood beside you," the younger man continued, "and the fire burns bright. The morning is gray, and the cold has lessened. It will snow presently. Even now it is snowing." "Yes, even now it is snowing." "The tribesmen hurry. Their loads are heavy and their stomachs empty with lack of feasting. The trail ahead is long and they travel fast. I go now. Is it well?"
"It is well. I am as a last year's leaf hanging lightly on a branch. When the first wind blows, I fall. My voice has become like an old woman's. My eyes no longer show me the way of my feet, and my feet are heavy, and I am tired. It is well."
He bowed his head in contentment until the last noise of the moccasin on the snow died away. He knew his son was beyond recall. Then his hand moved out from the firs to touch the wood. It alone stood between him and what lay beyond the death that opened before him. Now the measure of his life was a handful of sticks. One by one they would go to feed the fire. And just so, step by step, death would come closer to him. When the last stick had given all of its heat, the frost would begin to gather strength. First his feet would yield, then his hands, and the lack of feeling would travel slowly to his body. His head would fall forward upon his knees, and he would rest. It was easy. All men must die. He did not murmur. It was the law of life, and it was just. He had been born close to the earth, and close to the earth had he lived. Its law was not new to him. It was the law of all flesh. Nature was not kindly to the flesh. She had no concern for that single thing called the individual. Her interest lay in the race of man as a whole. He grasped this idea firmly. He saw its truth displayed everywhere. The awakening of life in a tree, the bursting greenness of its branches, the fall of the yellow leaf. In this alone was told the whole history. But one task nature did give the individual, Did he not perform it? He died. Did he perform it? It was all the same. He died. Nature did not care. There were plenty who would obey. It was only the need that this duty be obeyed, not the man who obeyed it, which lived and lived always. The tribe of Kashkush was very old. The old men he had known when he was a boy had known old men before them. Therefore it was true that the tribe lived, that it represented the obeying of all its members, whose final resting places were unremembered. They were not important. They were chapters in life's story. They had passed away like clouds from a summer sky. He also would pass away. Nature did not care. To life she gave one task and one law. To continue the race was the task of life. Its law was death. A young girl was a good creature to look upon, full-breasted and strong, with a lightness to her step and a shine in her eyes. But her task was yet before her. The light in her eyes brightened and her step quickened. She laughed with the young men, then she turned away. She passed on to them her own unrest, and she grew fairer and yet fairer to look upon. Finally, some hunter took her to his tent to cook and work for him, and to become the mother of his children. And with the coming of her children, her beauty left her. She dragged her legs and arms when she walked. Her eyes lost their brightness. Then only the little ones found joy in the old lined face. Her task was done. In a little while, in the first famine or in the first long trail, she would be left, as he had been left in the snow, with a little pile of wood. Such is the law. He placed a stick carefully on the fire and returned to his thoughts. It was the same everywhere, with all things. The insects disappeared with the first frost. When age settled upon the rabbit, it became slow and heavy and could no longer run faster than its enemies. Even the big bear grew old and blind, to be dragged down at last by a small group of barking sled dogs. He remembered how he had left his own father along the Klondike River one winter. It was the winter before the missionary came with his books and his box of medicines. Many times Kashkush had recalled with pleasure the taste of those medicines. The one called painkiller was especially good. But now his mouth refused to moisten. He remembered that the missionary had become a worry to them. He brought no meat into the camp, and he ate much. The hunters did not like this. Then, when they were near the Mayo, he became ill, and afterward the dogs pushed the stones away and fought for his bones.
That was part one of The Law of Life. We will complete the story next week. That's all the time we have today, but tune in tomorrow for another Learning English program on The Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.